from where we were on Tuesday. So at the end of the lecture on Tuesday, we've managed to build a function called treeamp. This code here is, small print, is just everything we wrote last time, or at least all the main functions. And the punchline was really this treeamp function, which supposedly generates all possible tree amplitudes in n equals 4 superbeating mills, all component amplitudes. And it's very, very fast. It's faster than anything you can get, on the street. And it's, great. So you might think that we're pretty close to being done. But in reality, we've left off the most important step, which is verifying that the formula is correct. I mean, after all, we didn't prove the recursion relations. We have no theoretical basis. I mean, maybe many people in this audience do have some theoretical understanding of this and probably think they could prove or argue that this is correct. But for the moment, let's just consider it a conjecture. So we have this formula, which looks amazingly concise, much more concise than what people have had before. It's very compact. What does it have to do with tree amplitudes? How can we check it without relying on some authority or some other program? This is the important question to be asking in your research. When you're calculating something that nobody's ever calculated before, you don't have a reference to look it up in. And so what's a really important general purpose skill to have for working with Mathematica is how to check that your formulas are doing what they're supposed to. So in this case, I hope by the end of the lecture that I'll convince you all that the formula for the BCFW recursion relations is correct, that it has so many remarkable properties that it couldn't possibly be wrong. And as we'll see, most of these tests rely on some sort of numerical check. I like to use integers, and we'll evaluate this for a bunch of integers. It's also another typical handle is to just play around with the algorithm. So by the end of the talk, I should be able to generate a few hundred different 8-point n squared MHV different formulas that will all be matched by 40-term identities. And if they all match, then it's probably pretty good evidence. Similarly, if you can check that, if you look at the 175 terms in the 10-point n cubed MHV amplitude, there are spurious poles in every one of them. If you add them all up, do they cancel or not? If you multiply by all the physical poles, do you get an integer or a rational number? Simple tests like this. It's in one sense a really robust check of the code, because if even a single sign were wrong, if you add up 34 million terms for the 20-point amplitude, you can't get anything wrong. But it's also it's a way to check that you're understanding the physics and a formula that's appeared for many years in papers, this could easily be a conjecture. And it's this step which is more exciting, checking to see whether or not it works. Even if it does work, usually putting it in Mathematica and getting all the details worked out is really illuminating. There are lots of little subtleties that are not really realized until you're forced to spell everything out completely. So we're going to have to spell out everything completely in order to evaluate these amplitudes and check them. So the general strategy for today, it's going to be broken up into two parts. The first part is just evaluating the amplitudes. So converting these functions of R's into functions, that can eat momentum twisters in integer valued, real valued, doesn't matter, but just so that they can spit out a number given external data. Right now we have this, these very beautiful, dual superconformal invariant functions, but how do we use those to actually calculate, an actual amplitude for some particular configuration? And then we will use that to generalize. Along the way, we'll have to define what all these hatted variables mean and see how easy it is to generalize the R invariants for hatted variables without any difficulties. And then we'll randomize the recursion schemes a bit in a way which hopefully will work. So generate lots of random formulas. OK, so the status quo We regenerated this function treeamp, which is purported to be all possible tree amplitudes in n equals 4. And we can see, so the 8-point n squared MHV is this, this combination of 20 products of pairs of R's. And our first goal is just like last time, it's organizational. So how do we organize this list of R's into something that we can evaluate? As we've seen before, we've encountered these R's many times already during the school. And from Pedro's talk in the first day, we even know how to extract components from the R's, and they're interesting things, but they have more structure than just a single polynomial or a rational function. So the first goal is just be to organize this in a systematic way which will work for any n and k. Remember that the number of R's, each R is its own delta 0/4 in fermionic variables. Okay, so the standard R invariant is this R of 5 arguments. It's got 5 propagators downstairs. And the delta function is it's got 5 non-vanishing entries up there for each of the etas. And if you remember from the first lecture, to get out a given component, if we wanted the 1, 1, 2, 4 component, we took the coefficient of eta A once, twice, and then the coefficient of eta B, and then coefficient of eta D. And so in a much more general sense, I really don't have time to describe this, but it's not very hard. It's in the paper that describes the VCFW package. And it'll take you 5 to 10 minutes at a coffee shop on a napkin to see the connection between the eta components and the following. That all the subamplitudes come from 4 k by k determinants of the matrix of coefficients of the etas. And so that's the general statement. And how to go from which determinants to which components is a kind of a trivial map that I'm not going to have time to describe. But the simplest possible case, if you just want to have gluonic component amplitudes, and by gluonic here, it's kind of in quotes because I mean in the momentum twister gluons. If you're interested in how going back to the normal gluons and normal helicity amplitudes, come and see me during the problem session. I'd be happy to explain it. And it's also in the paper on describing BCFW. But if you wanted a gluonic amplitude, you just take, a given k by k minor and just multiply it to the fourth power. Very simple. So that's what we'll be doing because it's a little bit easier. But it's naturally generalizable. I mean, if we had more time, we'd write more general code. So just for the purposes of organization, I like to split up the R into 2 parts. Of course, it's redundant, but okay. So it's in terms of a rational function, which is just these propagators here, and then the matrix of coefficients of the D matrix. Or I'm sorry, the matrix of coefficients of the etas. Okay, now the reason why is because when you do the fermionic integrals, you're going to project out, you're going to pick up some of these components. And so when we have more R's, when K is greater than 1, we'll have some matrix here of coefficients, 2 rows, 3 rows, whatever. And its determinants will pick out the given components. So, if you'll forgive me for not calling it something more natural like AA or something, I called it a residue, the rational function, because it's, if you'll let me give, well, it's the only time I'll mention a Grassmannian in this talk, but it turns out that the matrix of coefficients of the etas enjoy a full GLK symmetry. And it just happens to be the case that if you didn't even know this rational function here at all, if all you knew was basically the geometry of this matrix of coefficients and nothing else, that there's a unique formula for the residue. And in fact, you can uniquely label all these configurations in any Grassmannian in terms of like n integers at most, usually a lot less than that. So there is a canonical functional on a Grassmannian which picks out all these rational functions. But that's, but just residue is the rational part. D is the coefficients. Okay, so the first part is let's consider a particular tree amplitude, something easy. So let's do NMHV. So we have tree amp, say 6-point NMHV. We have these 3 R's. Now the residue parts are pretty easy. We've already seen them, and we've already pretty much done this. So we don't need to. So I'm going to go pretty fast here. Each R turns into the product of these five guys, and it doesn't matter whether or not it's had it or not. So we're just going to. So it's So each R turns into, let's first just pick out the components. So each R is turned into its components, and then each of those components we want to break into the four cyclic parts. So partition 411 will do it. Okay. If we maybe we can just do this for the first part, just to see what's going on. So this was the here, so we can see the term. So it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and here are the five parts. Now, if we want to put we want to get an angle bracket on this, and we could use the notation that Pedro used, which is which is great. I tend to use this AB just because it's some abstract function. Let's see, I need to put some. Partition, did I spell that wrong? Oh, something went wrong. Or let's just do that again. Okay, so let's just start again. Sometimes that happens. So Rx is we're gonna rewrite this as times AB partition x411. So AB is just the same thing as this as the angle bracket. Great. Now, of course, we really want it to be 1 over that. So there we go. Okay, now that's going to work for any amplitude. And so if we go to, say, like 12, 6 or something, like, or 12, 4, the first term is going to be that horrible thing. But notice that it already started off because it was started off being written as a product of 4 R's. That's just the denominator. Now I hope we have time for a brief aside for the moment, just because these formulas are horrible to read, and I know everybody would rather format it. And so I'd just like to share with you my general philosophy about this. I really prefer an opt-in strategy for formatting. So if you have I'd like to, you know, make this nice as opposed, and then, but by default, always have it in the raw form. So let's make a function that will make this pretty. So we can do nice, some arbitrary expression, and what we want to do is we want to replace things let's do this. Expression. If you don't know about the function rho, it's a very nice kind of aesthetic function. It just makes. It's a list without any commas or anything like that. Okay, so this is kind of nice. Let's see, out 28. So we've made it a little bit nicer. We can also fix this by saying, let's do something for the caps. So cap, x and y. Goes to row list. Which? Yeah, I think so. You're right. I want it to be a separate line, though. Okay, so this is just going to make things a little bit more readable, and hopefully it will help if I do it at the beginning of the talk as opposed to later. Oh, I need to flatten this list because it's got the brackets and stuff. Okay, so it's starting to look a little bit more readable. I have an extra comma in there because of a typo. And it needs to replace this multiply. Okay. Anyway, this is not a particularly good use of our time because obviously that's not particularly readable either. But anyway, that's the denominator of the first term in the 12-point end of the fourth MHV amplitude. Okay. So this thing works great, And it's simple enough, and it works, and we'll figure out how to evaluate it for these hatted guys in a moment. But let's go ahead and save that function. So we can say R2Residue is this replacement rule. I want to get rid of that. OK. Now let's think about the, let's see. We can first do the, let's first discuss how to, what to deal with the cap, to do with the cap stuff. So the only, if you remember from last lecture, there's just one universal formula. And I was originally planning to do it in any number of dimensions and whatnot. But of course, we're usually in four. So this is all you really need to know about the cap set. If you have the intersection of the line AB with the plane CDE, that this is equal to the, you know, ZA, B, C, D, E, plus C, B, C, D, E, A, which is also equal to minus Z, you know, it's minus Z, C, D, E, A, B, minus C, D, E, A, B, C. Because this is the unique five-term identity among any arbitrary four vectors. So it's just kind of trivial. OK, you could use either one you'd like. Let's just use this one instead. And the basic strategy is that whenever we encounter something like cap with some, so we have some line and some plane, we just want to feed in the labels for the, you know, this is going to be line, the first component of the line, you know, and this is this, and ZB is the second component of the line. So we're just going to expand this out using this identity. Okay, so let's see what this is going to look like. So cap X and Y, and I'll define a block just because I'd like to have the join, so the total range. Maybe it's not that. Yeah, let's not do that actually. Oh, sorry. It's best to define what this thing is doing in terms of the arguments. So let's say that we have some angle bracket with a cap inside of it. Now, I put in the X over here and the W over here, and they both have three underscores on them. That means that the cap, that means that they can be zero length. So the cap can be on the left, it can be on the right, it can be in the middle, it can be anywhere it wants. So this is going to be an arbitrary four bracket that has a cap inside of it. Okay, and we want to write this as the sum of two pieces. We want to write it as ABX Y1 W times this formula here. So AB, you know, the coefficient that we get there, which is prepend Z with Y2. Now, we could do this in a little bit more clever way if we wanted to. But in this case, because we always have lines intersecting planes in that order, it doesn't make any difference. You know, this is sufficient for our purposes. So and then we want to hit Y2 with append Y1. OK, so and we'll call this our cap rules. Great. So let's see what this thing does. So if we look at AB 1 2 3, you know, cap 5 4 5 say 6 7 8, something like this. Cap rules, it replaces it. It takes the hatted 4 5 and replaces it with the 4 times 5 6 7 8 plus 5 times 6 7 8 4, which is exactly what the formula has there. So it works. And that means that if we even look at something like this, this out 28, which is some horrible thing, and repeatedly apply the cap rules, we'll eventually get some, you know, longer but simple formula involving all of these purely external particles. Now, I don't think in this case we actually have anything that's going to vanish, but occasionally you'll have things that vanish. And another thing that's, we can do that when we see an example of it. Okay. Yeah? Any questions? Okay. Oh, yeah, so there's one that vanishes, right? So we also like to simplify and get rid of some of these things. A nice way of doing it, simply, I mean, there's lots of different ways you could do it, but a really easy piece of code that'll do it is you want to take, so we use an arbitrary length x, which could be 0 or 1 or 3 or whatever, doesn't matter, y, say that w is separated, so y could be next to each other, y and y could be next to each other, they could be far apart, doesn't matter. We're just naming them for the purposes of identifying this pattern. Okay, so this is saying if there's a pattern where there are two y's separated by anything in between them, or before them, or after them, 0. Oh, that simplified it quite a lot. Great. Okay, so this is another nice, convenient part, you know, convenient simplification bit. Okay, so now we have to multiply these residues by the rational functions. By the, and we can even add this to this code here. So let's say cap rules, and we can add this. So now we have to get the D matrices out. Now the D matrices are pretty much the same kind of strategy. But importantly, the D matrices, if you think about the row of the Susi delta function, this eta times 4 bracket, everything there is linear, which means that they act under the hat-aimed variables, they act exactly like the 4 brackets do. In fact, they look like a 5 bracket. So if you have a hatted z, you just expand them out and you get a coefficient for za and for zb. And because of that, we're basically going to use exactly the same code to get to expand the Susi delta functions for the eta, for the D matrices. Okay, but let's look at a nice example. So if we look at treeamp 6.1, and then let's look at the second term, because we've already looked at the first term. Second term. 1, 2, 3, 5, 6. Now, we already know what it is. We already know what the residue part of it is, because that is just by R2 residue. Good. But now we want to come up with a function that's going to give you the coefficients of the matrix. Now, there, we're going to start off with basically exactly the same thing. So we have Rx goes to partition x 411 and AB. So these are going to be the non-vanishing entries, but where do they go? These non-vanishing entries go, we want this to be the coefficient of eta. So we have 1, 2, 3, 3, 5, and 6. This has got to be the coefficient of eta 6. This is the coefficient of eta 1. So, okay, we want to rotate this. Right. So if we rotate right, we now have them lined up with the arguments of x. Oh, so no, we don't. That's good. Good. So that means that the first term now is the coefficient of eta 1. The second term is the coefficient of eta 2, eta 3, et cetera. So we can do the following. A rule x that. Now it doesn't look like it's going to do much, but there's a very useful function called thread, which will then make it, you know, so we're going to send, we want the first column to be this, we want the second column to be this 4 bracket, we want this, et cetera. So, yeah. And so we can wrap this all now as a sparse array, or normal sparse array. And we get the matrix out. Now, in this case, there's one little subtlety about this that will be it's important to take care of. Probably, you know, you have to bite the bullet sometime. The sparse array, it by default is going to have a length equal to its maximum element, and but we would like it to be uniform for all of them, because we want to have this k by n matrix, and we want everything to be of length n, even if it's only got 5 non-vanishing entries in the first 5 entries. You know, if only the first 5 entries are non-vanishing. We actually want to define our rule analogous to the R to residue. We want to have an R to D matrix. I guess it won't capitalize. Yeah. What? Do you see a 0 there? Yeah. So for example, let's take this out and look at it in isolation. Oops. I'm trying to take an arbitrary R, and I want to get a matrix of coefficients of eta's attached to that. So for example, let's say we had like R1, 3, 5, 7, 9. The coefficient of eta 1, in the Suzy delta function is eta 1 times this bracket, plus eta 3 times that bracket, plus eta, so this thing dotted, this matrix dotted into 1, well, eta range 9. You could, but then there'd be a minus sign in two of the five terms. So it's just a little bit nicer this way. I mean, so complement always sorts. That's one of the problems with complement, as opposed to like delete duplicates. But so if you complement, to get the eta out? Yeah, we could do that. But I really want to think about it as a matrix. Right. So even these vanishing columns here of this matrix, I mean, this is a, if we look at this matrix, matrix form, right, so it's just some 1 by n matrix. But when we get to higher k, each r is going to contribute its own row of this matrix. And it turns out that if you just knew the matrix and nothing else, and you don't even need to know the whole matrix, you just need to know the relationships among the columns of the matrix, you can actually, it uniquely identifies everything about the function and all of its identities and all of its boundaries and everything about it. So there is actually a really beautiful mathematical story attached to that, and I won't get into it, but it's really nice to think about these things as a matrix. For one thing, the eta coefficients can mix with each other under GLK transformations in this. So if you have 8-point n squared MHV and you have two R's, you can rotate the eta's into each other. Anyway. Yep, so that's the goal. Sorry, I don't actually want to multiply by the eta's. I just want the matrix of coefficients. Right. So this, so I'm envisioning all the Suzy delta functions as some matrix times the supersymmetric eta's or z's, which maybe I'll draw that way. So it's this one. This is what I want. Inside here is the eta's. So there's eta A. But I don't want to multiply by the z's. I just want the coefficients. It's the determinants of the, by the way, this is a very convenient way of doing supersymmetry without any fermionic variables, because determinants are antisymmetric and everything works great. It's just a little redundant when you have one. When you have one, you multiply by four entries of this thing, so it's four 1 by 1 determinants. But for any component of any amplitude in any k, it's just four k by k determinants. Which of them takes more time than I've got to explain. But okay. So here we go. And this is going to work for anything that just has integers, no cap, no hatted variables. In particular, this will work nicely for, so now we have to see what to do with the hatted variables. Let's say we had R like this, but it was a cap 10, 11, 12, 13, 19. I mean, it doesn't make any difference. We want to expand this the exact same way that we did for the single 4 bracket. So we basically want to copy this cap rules, but replace it with, now this is not really, I mean, this has to do with, somewhat in quotes, because R is not being expanded linearly. It's just the matrix of coefficients which is being expanded linearly. So if R has a cap anywhere inside of it, replace it with the sum of the twisters, and so, okay, so this is basically the formula. So the rows of the D matrix get added in this way. So if this is a little confusing, it's worth thinking about later, but this is this works nicely. Notice, by the way, that each of these R's, the arguments, because it's a, you know, it's a, got five non-vanishing entries in the row, and because this five-term identity is a unique five-term identity among four or among five four vectors, the bosonic part of the delta functions are always automatically satisfied. So you're always sitting on the kinematic, you know, on the kinematic solution, because these four brackets dotted into the external z's will automatically be zero. And that is a big advantage relative to momentum space BCFW, for example, where you have to care about momentum conservation. Here, it's completely manifest. Okay, so let's just combine this, and we'll see. So we'll have an R to D matrix row. But we want to define it for a particular N. It's got a, and we want, so R. Yeah, in the, sorry. Yeah, I need more chalk for this talk. In terms of the matrix, so we have, in the D matrix, we'll have some, some D alpha, for each alpha, so each individual R, so let's just say the first row, the one eta 1 plus, you know, D2 eta 2 plus, you know, D, say, 5 eta 5, if we were looking at this thing. If this thing is just the fermionic components of the first z, okay, and if we expand out, if we were replacing this with a, it's clearly linear in the z's, okay. That's another way of saying it. That's just clearly linear in the z's. Just like the four brackets are, because the determinant is linear. This is just the Suzy delta function. Down here, we also have these, you know, angle brackets, products of angle brackets with caps. Down here? So the residue part does not expand linearly. It expands by taking each of the individual parts and expanding it linearly. Yes. That's why I should call it, I should rename it to D or something, but I'm just going to chop off its head. So I'm going to, okay. Yeah. Okay, so this is the, so we want to repeatedly apply this. So we want us to take R, so it's going to be, okay, that's the rule. Very good. No, I don't need to do that. Let's make it a function instead. Okay, this is the more operative part. This cap expansion thing is. So I need to also define what n is for this. So we want to repeatedly apply this. We want to expand out all the caps. Yeah, let me not define this function yet. So let's look at a particular term in BCFW. Say, yeah. Oh, sure. I'm sorry, I'm breezing through some of those things. So if we got rid of the normal, what would happen is it would just say sparse array, which turns out to be, it's a very efficient storage object in Mathematica. It's particularly good for sparse arrays when you only have a few non-vanishing entries. But it also doesn't behave like a normal list, so I usually, normal makes it a normal list. And I probably could do everything with the sparse arrays, but I'm scared of them. Okay, so let's look at this thing. So if we have a product of R's, we first want to take out each individual R, because each individual R is going to be a row of the D matrix. And then with this, we want to expand out. We want to do the repeated expansion for each of the any of the hatted variables that are in there. Maybe there's one with more hatted variables. Let's see. Let's try. Parentheses. Okay, so maybe this one has got two sets of hats. Okay? Now here, we can also use the fact that R, when it has two arguments, is also vanishing. So we can actually lift the exact same code we used up here for the angle brackets, which is, up, there we go. Good. So we can lift exactly the same code and just replace it with R. Good, so it simplifies it a little bit. Not really necessary because it's going to be killed by the four when we expand it in terms of four brackets anyway. But okay, let's, and then once we've expanded it entirely, so now it's just a sum of ordinary things with ordinary four brackets, then it's meaningful to put the coefficient of a given eta. Now all the etas are unhatted, basically. They're not capped. So we can just immediately, you know, now they're, the eta is in terms of external data. Now, the only thing that we want to, that I need to add here is I need to add a call for n for the for how large the matrix we want the matrix to be. If we didn't do it, let's see what happens. Let's see. So nice, and we can say matrix form. Okay, so this is what the coefficient of etas are. Looks a little scary, but not so bad. So that's just from these multiple expansions. And the first row is pretty nice because the R was really nice. It was just five non-vanishing entries. But the second row is a little bit horrible. Not so bad. It'll work. By the way, we might want to put in this nice. We can also take, if we added a M matrix Q, matrix form, that will make this a little bit nicer. Okay, so now it's automatic. Okay, great. So now we want to have a function which takes a term in BCFW and spits out this matrix. So let's say, and I guess I don't want to make it a single R, so we'll say, so term to D matrix. As some BCFW term block. Now, the only subtlety is that for NMHV, there's only a single R. So it's the exact same problem we had when we tried to do list at, you know, get the individual terms in BCFW, that we cut off the head of the 5-point NMHV last time. So we have to be a little bit careful. I want to get a list of each R term. And if it's, if the head of term is R, then I just really want term in brackets. Oh, I can't spell. Okay. If head term is R, I want that. Otherwise, I want list term. Okay, so that's our list of R's. Now, for each of these things, and I need to tell it what N is as well. When we'll do exactly the same procedure every time. Sorry, this is a little bit more difficult to follow, but hopefully we'll see how it applies. So R list, for each of the R's, we want to do exactly what we just did. We did it for two of them in 8-point a moment ago. And now the only subtlety is that, so notice that this thing had an entry in 8. It had a coefficient of eta 8, and so did this one. But there are other terms in BCFW. For example, let's find, like, 2. So notice that this is not printing like a matrix. It's not printing like a matrix because there are, we have five entries in the top row, and we have 8 entries in the bottom row, or vice versa. So it's not a square matrix. We'd like to make sure that it's always of uniform length. Okay, so it's the last argument of sparse array, or at least the last one we're going to give it. Okay, residue to D matrix, or term to D matrix of block. Okay, let's put this in our repository of the good code up here. So R to residue, cap rules. This is all good code. Good. So let's see what it looks like. So typical tree amp, let's say 10 point n cubed MHV. Let's look at, you know, the 50th term in it. So that's something like this. Now I want to build this list of objects, this list of pairs, residue and D matrix. And so what we want is the first term is going to be the residue, and then the second thing is this D matrix. Now the D matrix we have this, so we know how to do that. That's going to be term to D matrix, and that's the term, and then N, which in this case is 10. So we'll need to make sure when we put this all together that it, let's see if that worked. Nice. Okay, so that is our big 10 by 3 matrix of coefficients of these etas. Great. Now the residue is even easier. The residue is the easy part, really. It's that term, and then we want to do R to residue. R to residue. Great. And we could do the cap rules and stuff. Why not? Now, usually it's not really good to apply these replacements inside of a list, so that's what I'm going to do here. I'm going to put parentheses around it to shield it. Yeah, this is that's obviously not very good. Let's change our syntax a little bit. So we're going to make it a function now, and then this way it'll apply all these things to it at once, which is what I really wanted to begin with. So clear all. R to residue. And now it's a function. Sorry for changing the structure. Okay. Good. There we go. So now we have some. Why do I have a. I probably need to put that in parentheses. There it is. I see. Good, it's got that blank in it. Okay, great. So now we've got it. Now, I claim that if you want to get a given component of the amplitude, well, this is not a claim. So in order for us to get a particular SUSY component of this amplitude, we need to pick 4 3x3 minors of this matrix. And so what we can do is. So we'll take the first thing, the residue, and multiply it by the fourth power of the first determinant, say. Number 2, all, 1, 2, 3. The 4, and this should be the analog of the gluonic amplitude for the split felicity. I need a second at. 0. Okay, the 50th term vanishes. Let's try 10. Okay, so 10, this thing, there we go. So there is our amplitude term. While we're at it, we might as well just check that it's, see that the amplitude, see if this, if we have all of our code working here at all. So I will get rid of these nice things. Make this there. Okay, so now let's define a function which is this residue matrix, with the residue tree amplitudes. Which, no, I won't call it something horrible like that. So let's, component amplitude, amp, n and k, block the residue list, and then the D matrix list. And the residue list is just the two residue on each of the R tree amp. So let's see, R tree amp. N, K, get rid of the 10th. equals R to residue. Good. And then the D matrix list is going to be R to term to D matrix. Great. Okay, so that should work, and then we can just transpose those to the... Oh, good. Thank you. That is where I needed N to begin with. Yeah. And it is the second, listed as the second argument, right? Yes, it is. Okay. So we're now going to form this list, this combination of residue list and D matrix list. And this is just going to be it for each of the things. So component amp, let's say 8. Let's look at something easy. So 6, 1. So 6-point NMHV. And if we look at nice, there we go. So we've got this R invariant times this matrix of coefficients of the etas. R invariant times this matrix of coefficients of the etas. R invariant times this matrix of the coefficients of the etas. Okay? If we looked at the 7-point, we just add a few more terms. The 10-point, we add more terms. Now, this is great. And in order for us to get a particular component, if we wanted a gluonic amplitude out of this, for each one of these things, we would take the residue times power det, if we wanted gluonic. Otherwise, we'd multiply by 4 determinants, all 1, because it's just a single, if we wanted the first component, 4. We want to do this on each of the terms above. By the way, this automates the vanishing for terms that are 0. Okay. Because it's going to multiply by is when you pick up an eta that's inside it. Never mind. So total, there. So this is what the amplitude looks like for the 10-point NMHV for 10-point NMHV for the first component. And if we wanted the second component, we'd see it there, third component, et cetera. Okay, so now we've got we've effectively put together a function which takes our R's, which is very nice, and spits out a formula in terms of angle brackets, which means that we can evaluate it. Now, this is important. And we've already seen how to evaluate these R's. It's very simple. We just need to take choose some random Z's and so now we've got our component amplitudes. That all pretty much works. And let's define a separate function which does all this because it looks a little scary. So let's say split helicity amplitude. N and K is all of this, and it's going to be range K on component amp N and K. Okay, so that's our split helicity amplitude. Now we've defined that separately, and we can evaluate it numerically or anything else. So in order for us to evaluate something numerically, we want to start off with, this is what was in the first exercise. We'd like to just define a set of Z's to be completely arbitrary. We want to find some global variable that we can just on which all these angle brackets are just determinants. You already saw an example of this in Pedro's talk. So let's say random integer. If we use integers, there'll be some nice payoffs later. So let's say we're just going to range from -500 to 500, and its length 10 and 4. So that's going to give us a 10 by 4 matrix. And if we look at the split helicity amplitude, 10-point NMHV, AB replaced with det Z's. There we go. So now we've got it. So that's the 10-point NMHV, but if you wanted the 10-point N squared MHV, there's the 10-point N squared MHV for the one with the eta 1 squared and eta 2 squared, or eta 1 to the 4th and eta 2 to the 4th. This is only giving the split helicity ones, to save some time. There's the 10-point N cubed MHV. Oh, and look, we didn't get rid of one of these caps. So that's an interesting little bug. Okay. Let's see, where did that come from? Any good ideas? So that should work for the R list. Any guesses? Oh, it's an angle bracket. That's the problem. It's not the. So it's this one. Cap rules is not being applied multiple times. Okay. I'm not sure if that's going to work, but we'll see. Darn it. What term is that? So I'm going to pull off the total, and we're going to look at the 10-pointed. Yeah, it's definitely inside one of the arguments. You're right, so we don't actually need to do any of that stuff. We can just say position. So we can find out what position there's some cap in it, because there shouldn't be any caps anywhere. Ooh. Component amp, T matrix, R to residue. Okay. Well, all of our other amps kind of work nicely. Term to D matrix, as much as. Let's look. So it's one. Is it in there? No. Yes? It's in the other one? Oh, good. Okay. Oh. That's not very good. Okay. Well, let's revisit this in a minute. Anyway, that should generally work. So there's clearly some bug somewhere. It's an exercise to find that. How much time do I have? 5 minutes. Okay. So let me explain. Okay. So far we've set up the rudiments for how to numerically evaluate things. All this stuff is better defined in the BCFW package anyway. So you can, except for the cap. Well, so you should be able to fix this code and get it working on your own. But as soon as it's working, your first job is to check that it is internally self-consistent, because when you encounter, you know, if you're calculating the 7-loop amplitude and, you know, for the 5-particle 7-loop amplitude, nobody's ever calculated that before. How do you know that your answer is right? If you're coming up with a conjecture for the all-loop integrand or something like this, how do you know that your answer is right? And one way to do it is by checking consistency. And consistency is usually, the best way of checking consistency is by looking at these formulas. Notice that BCFW, although it makes superconformal and dual superconformal symmetries manifest, it totally breaks cyclicity. The amplitudes are also supposed to be fully dihedrally symmetric, but they're picking out a particular leg at every stage, and it's picking out a particular form for every amplitude. So there isn't just one BCFW recursion formula. There's many, many of them, because at every single stage of the recursion, you can do whatever you'd like to the sub-amplitudes. And it's actually it's easy enough that I think I can do it in my 1 or 2 minutes left. But we can take the formulas we have, which is giving us a particular form of the amplitude, and we can quickly generate hundreds of different BCFW formulas. And if they all agree with each other, because none of them are going to look the same, none of them are manifestly cyclic, all of them have different spurious poles, they have different terms altogether. If they all agree with each other, then it's a huge check on the consistency on from that derives that this is a strong enough test to immediately imply that there are no spurious poles and other things. But we could also do spurious poles quickly, but okay. So my preferred method would be to not change any of these not to make new functions, but just to add an option to it. So we can say random q false. So the default, so this colon, if you haven't seen, I don't think we've seen it yet, that means the default value for the last argument is false. If we give it one, we can make it true if we'd like. But now we can take this and we just put in a rotate left. So let's say left, random integer. I mean, it might have looked like it was important that the slots went from 1 through n left minus 1, but of course it didn't. So n left. Okay, so we can rotate it by an arbitrary integer. Well, rotate left if random q. Otherwise, we don't want to rotate it. Okay, and similarly for this a right, we can say rotate left if random q. Random integer nr. Otherwise, we'll rotate it by 0. Okay, so we've just arbitrarily changed the two, you know, the subamplitudes, but we can also do it at the top as well. This one, I think I'm going to, okay. So, random amp. Okay, and the only difference here is we're going to use, I do need to define a separate function. Okay, so let's just, random recurse, BCFW recurse, and we need, we can rotate that if we'd like. Let's do rotate left, random. This one's definitely the random one, so it's okay. And left length label range. Okay, good. Length minus one. Good. So okay, so now we're going to rotate this, you know, that amplitude by an arbitrary amount as well. This looks great, and we're probably rotating everything we possibly could. So random amp, the only thing that's different is going to be the random BCFW recurse. Oh, and I didn't actually call the BCFW bridge with the random, so we'll make it true. That'll do it. Okay, so let's see if that worked. Random amp, let's do 6.1, 6-point NMHV. Oh, darn it, I'm storing it. If I want it random, I can't store it. Okay, clear all. Oh, good. So now it's changing. Okay, so it's random. There are only two possible amplitudes for the 6-point NMHV, so you're not going to get much variety. But let's go to let's look at the 10-point and to the fourth n squared MHV. Oh, that's a bit much. Let's look at the 8-point. Oh, that's okay. So 8-point n squared MHV, my favorite. All these different formulas. Now it turns out that there are about 700 different formulas you can get, and there are 75 linearly independent 40-term identities saying that these 20 terms are equal to the next 20 terms. Okay, and although it's probably risky, because obviously we don't have the my split helicity thing working, but let's see if we can check it, because then I can end and I'll be happy. So let's say component random component amp, and it's R to residue. It needs to be the same amp. So let's say amp equals n and k. Amp. Okay, and then so 8.2. And then let's we still have these same z's. It doesn't matter how long z's are, as long as they're long enough. So I have 10 of them, so 8's well within the range. Okay. Then I need to get these components out, so I need to put in this business. Why did it just? Oh, range 4. No, it's just range 2. Good. Total. Oh, let's not total it. Let's total it below. Okay. So that is the amplitude for the split helicity eta 1, eta 2. So it's like minus the momentum twister gluons are 1 and 2. Oh, this is probably a bit. Notice that all the terms just changed, but the answer didn't change. Let's go down to a lower thing just so I can see it. Oh, now it has to be range 1. Ugh. So this is the first component. All these different NMH. Oh, okay, good. It worked. I don't know what happened to that cap, but all these things are different BCFW formulas, randomly generated using random recursion relations. Okay, and you have this huge space of identities. But that say that these 10 terms here, because the 8 points got 10 terms, are equal to those 10 terms, or equal to those 10 terms, or equal to this one. And it's true for every component. Not range 2. Sorry, 1 plus 2. So we'll take the eta 3 component instead, or we can look at the eta 2 components. Right. Or if we go to 8 point n squared MHV, and I'm just going to shut it off just because it's a bit much, and we'll say range 2. Okay. Well, I do really want to see the output. Okay, but notice it's not changing, right? So all of these different things, we have these huge 40-term identities. Okay, those things could not possibly be valid if it weren't if it weren't that this was the right answer. Okay, can I do 1 minute or no? One more very brief test that's very simple. We can just select. It's a nice little cute bit of code too. So let's do select. I want to multiply this by all the physical propagators to see that it gets not just a rational number, but it's an integer. Because the only things that can appear, this big thing, is just got to be the product of all the propagators. So physical poles is AB, and then select subsets, partition range 8, 211. This is obviously not very helpful. Okay, and then we want to say length. Delete duplicates equals 4. All right. Oh, that didn't work at all. Partition range 8, 2, 1, 1. Subsets. Oh, length flatten. Okay. And then flatten. There we go. So those are all the physical propagators. See, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 4, 5, 1, 3. Okay. Let's go ahead and put in this, evaluate it for our z's. Oh, I got a new formula. Okay, but this, I really want to emphasize, this is definitely the most important step. So if we take times, because this is the whole, okay, this times out 463, which nobody else can read, but I can read. That's that. Integer. Do you see? Okay, good. Integer Q. True. There are no. That's an advantage of choosing integer-valued z's instead of just rational ones, is that the amplitudes have to be, just physical propagators in the denominator. And okay. Anyway, so this will go up online. I should fix the bug before it goes up, and feel free to play around with it. The real important point is that having the formula or just copying it isn't the challenge. It's gaining familiarity with it, using it to find new conjectures and check your own conjectures. So anyway, thank you so much. I appreciate it.